certainly a topic that's on everyone's mind is the sudden outbreaks of material nature in very unfavorable ways. As you know, the headlines have been dominated by the ever-escalating death toll from the recent natural disturbance. You may be wondering, what is the appropriate Krishna conscious response to such a situation? Of course, everything that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita is meant for making our temporary stay in the material world to be as effective and dynamic as possible. Effective for completing the mission of your human form of life, and dynamic for propelling you to the successful completion of that mission. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives you personal instructions. And if you follow them, you become immune to the upsets inflicted by material nature. First of all, let us think about how we are involved in material nature. Actually, we don't belong here. Krishna talks about this in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Mamaivamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. All you living entities are my eternal parts and parcels, but now you're stuck in the oppressive material atmosphere and you are struggling with your senses and mind. We need to understand this point first before we begin to consider the upsets and upheavals inflicted by material nature. The first question about disaster relief should be, what am I doing in the material atmosphere? A fly buzzing around the room sees a nice piece of bread covered with jam. The fly is attracted. The fly lands in the jam, tasting its sweetness. The more the fly struggles to get away, the more the fly becomes implicated, entangled. Similarly, the living entity, although originally part of Krishna, has been attracted by an hallucination that I will be self-sufficient, I will be an enjoyer and controller. With that kind of vision, that kind of hallucination, there's only one place you can reside, and that is the material atmosphere. By having that kind of psychology, you are disqualified from residence in the spiritual world. Lord Krishna wants to give you a choice, because without choice, there cannot be real love. Krishna has no intention of forcing his parts and parcels to love him. Therefore, when we develop a desire to exist separately from Krishna, in fact, a desire to imitate Krishna as the enjoyer and controller, then we have reserved for us a spot in the material world. The nature of the material world is such that it never fulfills your longings for real pleasure, love, and happiness, in case you haven't noticed that. You're allowed to hanker for these things, but the fulfillment is never there. Why is it that we have this longing for lasting pleasure, lasting relationships? It's because we remember our original spiritual existence. The problem now, however, is we are looking in the wrong place for such endless happiness, love, and pleasure. The material atmosphere constantly frustrates our desires. Sometimes even people say, well, I don't mind that everything here is temporary. Still, I'll try to enjoy it. But that proves to be such a disturbing experience. Please ask yourself the question, how did I come to material existence in the first place? What am I doing in this atmosphere? If you understand that you are a spirit soul, you're not the body, then you should think, how is it that pure spirit soul has this body of matter trying to enjoy this temporary world of matter? There's some powerful deluding energy that prevents us from addressing the realities. I've been telling so many people this week, just think, suppose the waves had gone east long enough to reach these shores instead of going west all the way to Africa. Suppose they had come east and were powerful enough to cross the Pacific Ocean and reach these shores. But generally, everyone has a feeling that real disasters never happen in developed countries. Disasters only happen in places like Bangladesh, India, Sri Lanka, Indonesia. But countries that have it together industrially and technologically, they never undergo disasters. This is our folk belief. We think that although there may be so many problems with our so-called civilization now, at least there is more safety. It's better for your well-being and longevity in the progressive, economically developed countries. Or they're known as what is called the free market countries. If the markets are free, that means there must be enlightenment. So, let me tell you about a UN study I just saw, an official UN-commissioned study. It surveyed all the countries of the world to find out who are the happiest people. And you'd be shocked to know which people came out the happiest in the world, according to material standards, not spiritual standards. Don't worry. We're talking pure materialism here. Which country do you think came out number one for happiness in the world, materially measured? Bangladesh, the poorest country in the world. Now, what does that teach you about material happiness? It wasn't a Hare Krishna research. It was an official UN research. Astonishing results. The poorest country in the world, one of the most disaster-prone countries, came out number one for happiness. Now think about that. What does that mean? If you think about it deeply enough, it'll upset all your conceptions of what life should be. How can people in the poorest country, how can people in the one of the most disaster-prone countries, where there's floods, ferries collapse with hundreds of people on them, all sorts of disturbances, and yet they are the happiest people in the world, materially speaking? Just thinking about that should cause us to throw out all our conceptions of what happiness is. No, it wasn't the USA. It wasn't England, Germany, Japan, none of the economic powerhouses. It was Bangladesh, the happiest people in the world when measured materially. That should cause an intelligent person to think, what am I striving for? What am I trying to do with my life? Who am I trying to fool? Who am I trying to kid? Now, let us put you in the place of a tourist who is in Thailand for a holiday. Anyone here ever been to the Paradise Isles in Thailand, like Phuket? Anyone here ever been? No. Generally, as I've been explaining to our devotees, Americans usually will go to Hawaii, or if they can't afford Hawaii, they'll go to Florida, like that. But the British, the Germans, and to a lesser extent, Australians, New Zealanders, they'll go to Thailand, to Phuket. Beautiful beach. Imagine it's you, laying in the sun on the beach, carefree, soaking in the rays, soaking the ambience. And then suddenly, you see the water start to recede in a very strange way. I saw a picture of this. Some tourists were, they were bathing in the water, and then they looked down, and underneath is just bare sand and rocks that were formerly hidden by the water. The water receded hundreds of yards, suddenly, no explanation. So you can imagine, there you are with your family, splashing, enjoying, vacation, holiday, beautiful sun, beautiful scenery. And all of a sudden the water disappears, and you're looking at sand and rocks. You're wondering what's going on. What happened was these tourists, although they couldn't understand what was happening, no one had any way to understand this, they just figured something is wrong, and they just started running for the shore. And what was coming behind them? A wall of water. Started out 10 feet high, and then went to 30 feet high the following wave, coming in at the speed of 100 miles per hour. It had started at 800 miles per hour, the speed of a jetliner, then slowed down only to 100 miles per hour when it hit the beach. There was no chance for these tourists to outrun such a wave. What if that had been you? One tourist said, who survived, "Our paradise turned to hell." Now, you should ask yourself the question, what kind of paradise turns to hell? If it's truly paradise, it doesn't turn to hell. So that teaches you something about this world. It's a world of presentation. It's a world of packaging. But the substance there will elude you. I was explaining to devotees how the grandson of the king of Thailand was jet skiing and disappeared in these waves. So opulent he was. You still have a monarchy in Thailand. If you're the grandson of the king, you have so much wealth at your disposal. Even though the government is not directly controlled by the monarchy, still the respect, the adoration is there, the wealth is there. You're so fortunate your grandfather is the king. And that good fortune disappears in a second. Prahlad Maharaj talks about this in the 7th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. After Lord Nrisimhadeva appears, and he asks Prahlad, "You've suffered so much on my behalf. Name any benediction you want." And what was Prahlad Maharaj's response? "Don't tempt me. You know, I come from a bad family. My father, you know, he was a bit of a problem." My father was the king of materialists. "I may seem like I'm a devotee, but don't tempt me offering me material benedictions. Instead, always give me the service of your servants." That was Prahlad Maharaj's request. He said, "I am eternally your servant. You are eternally the master. We have no other relationship than this." And then Prahlad further commented. He's a five-year-old boy. He says, "I have seen my father, Hiranyakashipu, was so powerful. If he would just move his eyebrows, the demigods would tremble in fear. Yet, all his power was finished in a moment." So what is the use of this? This is intelligent thinking. And Prahlad was only 5 years old. Yet he could see through the whole process of material gratification, and he said, "What's the use of it? Even someone as powerful as my father, who struck fear in the hearts of cosmic controllers, he lost everything in a second." Now, what was Hiranyakashipu's vision of the situation before he met his death? He considered Prahlad to be unfortunate. He said, Prahlad, you could have inherited all my wealth and power. You're my son. It was all going to be for you. But you fool. You dared to talk about Vishnu. And therefore now you must get the appropriate results. I, your father, will cut off your head. So Hiranyakashipu considered his son was a complete failure. You could have had all my wealth. You could have had all my power. Instead, you're talking about God. Instead, you're teaching Krishna consciousness. You have made such a crazy mistake. You can imagine if your parents are very wealthy. Let's say your parents are millionaires. We don't know. Maybe someone here has that situation. And all you have to do in order to be included in the will and inherit your parents' fortune is to remember to send one of your parents a birthday card. And you forget to do it. All your friends, all your associates are just, you fool! You could have been set up for life just by sending a birthday card that would have cost you, well, in the gift shop, what, $1? You could have not, you didn't have to work the rest of your life. But you couldn't remember to send your mother a birthday card. Now you've lost that inheritance. Yes, you would definitely feel foolish. Oh, my gosh, well, that was crazy. So that's what Hiranyakashipu thought about his son. Prahlad, you fool. I control the universe. What does this talk about God? Anyone can see I am the most powerful living entity. I've tricked even Brahma to give me immortality. You can have it all, Prahlad. I was going to give it to you. But you dared to talk about Vishnu. You dared to present yourself as a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, Prahlad, your situation is most lamentable. So Prahlad rightfully responded. What's the use in material advancement? It's finished in a second. Now, in response to this disaster, I saw in Australia before I came here, the scientists were reassuring the people, we'll improve our early warning systems. In fact, maybe we should build a wall, a seawall around Australia. Don't worry, next time we'll be more ready. Because the waves didn't come to Australia, therefore there's not heavy motivation. After all, it was just across the water in Indonesia. So the average Australian will think, the Indonesians, they deserve whatever they get anyway. They blew up, you know, a lot of Australians 2 years ago in some bomb, so. But this talk is going on. We'll be better prepared next time with our early warning systems. We're going to have an official government inquiry. We'll get to the bottom of all this. Don't worry, people. We'll protect you. How can anyone protect you against the ravages of material nature? Nothing can be done. You try to stop material nature one way, it comes another way. It is impossible to stop birth, death, disease, and old age. Krishna promises you that in Bhagavad Gita. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, dosha, anadarshana. Someone who's intelligent sees the fault, sees the dosha, the problem in material existence, that whatever you do, you can't get rid of these four things. Suppose you were the world's greatest swimmer. You had very little chance of surviving a wave moving at 100 miles per hour. It's very little chance. This incident should give us some appreciation of the power of material nature and how insignificant we are. One thing we can teach you here is how to consider all of the material world as an ocean of material existence. Bhava Sagara. Sagara means ocean. Bhava means becoming and unbecoming. So all of material existence is an ocean of things that are constantly coming into being and going out of being. and the waves in this ocean of material existence never leave you in a permanent situation. You're always being rocked by the twin waves of happiness and distress. You know, when you go to the beach where there's surf, the wave hits you and you feel delight. If you have your family there, or if you're a little kid, your parents with your kids, or with your companion, when the wave hits your body, oh. So material happiness is like that. It hits you in a wave. Oh, I'm happy. And then another wave comes. Oh, that's distressing. And then another wave. Oh, that was a good one. Oh, that was a bad one. In that way, you become just like surfers. Surfers, they can wait offshore for hours just waiting for the perfect wave that will give them a quick ride that lasts how many minutes, how many seconds? And then they have to go back out into the water again. So you can see them in Australia, New Zealand. You can see them all bobbing offshore with their surfboards, just watching for the perfect wave. And then, when the perfect wave comes, you've got to call it, mine! Letting all the other surfers know, don't touch this one, this wave belongs to me. That's the way life is in the material world. You've got to claim that wave of happiness, mine! stay back, this is my wave. So, it is a good example of how you live material life. Mine! This person belongs to me. This land belongs to me. You identify with your body, as you've heard so many times, and you identify with your possessions. You identify where you live. This is me and mine. And you try to accumulate as many waves of happiness as possible, and you try to forget about the waves of distress. And this is called life. All the time the waves are coming. One after another. In order to keep you from thinking about the distress waves, it's very necessary to be intoxicated. If you want to see a great difference in society today, think what would happen if all the intoxication disappeared and people had to face reality. They'd have to see the waves for what they are. Now, although this material world is called Bhavasagara, the ocean of the waves of becoming and unbecoming, that's not the only kind of ocean that exists. Bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness, will expose to your vision the ocean of material existence, but it will also present to you the ocean of ecstatic love for Krishna. So you have Bhavasaga, the ocean of becoming and unbecoming, and Bhavasaga, the ocean of ecstatic love of Krishna. Now you take your pick, which ocean you want to swim in, which waves you want to cope with. Do you want to cope with the waves of happiness and distress in the Bhavasaga? Or do you want to cope with the waves of ecstatic love of Krishna in the Bhavasaga? You take your pick. That much independence you have. So the devotees of the Lord are splashing in the waves of the ocean of ecstatic love of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya and his associates came to demonstrate how to do that. And those who are determined to repudiate Krishna's instructions for living in this world, they are splashing in the waves of happiness and distress in the ocean of material existence. So you take your pick. That much independence you have. More than that, as far as independence, you don't have. Once you're plunged into the ocean of material existence, you have to be dashed about, tossed about by the waves of happiness and distress. You'd hope that I'll only have happy waves, but no. In the world of duality, there must be happiness and distress. Even the so-called happiness doesn't satisfy you, in case you haven't noticed. Think about it, material time when you were happy. It was like some kind of deluded state. Oh, I feel so happy. Oh, this is nice. Oh, how delightful. It was like a tizzy. Yeah? Yes, you can remember? Your head was spinning, and we're happy, aren't we? All your friends, yes, yes, we're happy. Maybe some of you went to New Year's Eve parties. Anyone here went to New Year's Eve parties? Everyone's encouraging each other. Be merry, be merry, be happy. Happy New Year. Yes, yes. And everyone's standing, you know, with a glass in their hand. By holding the glass in your hand, it makes you feel secure. Like you have a place in society, you know. Yes? Yeah, you feel like you can relate to others because you have a glass in the hand. And the contents of the glass makes you feel, you know, outgoing, gregarious, you know. So everyone just stands there with the glass in the hand and talking and posturing and, you know, seeing if any, you know, if there's any good, any happy hunting around. And you want to be mirthful and convivial. None of what you talk about is in any way serious or meaningful. But that's not the point. The whole point is just to try and experience happiness. You're desperate. I've got to be happy. Let's be happy together. So think about it. It's like some kind of dizziness takes over you. And then quickly that dizziness goes away. You know how little kids like to make themselves dizzy? Any of you have children who like to just run around in a circle and experience feeling dizzy? Yes? Any of you did that as a kid? How many of you did that as a kid? You'll admit to this one. So, and your parents stopped you, right? Don't do that. And the kids couldn't understand. Mother, why are you telling me to stop making myself dizzy? It feels kind of fun. But somehow the parents told you it's not good for you. But the kids like that sensation. Remember when you were a little kid? You just run around in a circle and feel dizzy and, oh, it's nice. That is what material happiness is like. You can test this even as an adult. Make yourself dizzy. Go back to your apartment, your nice home, and just, you know, run in a circle. Yeah, I want to be happy. Just run in a circle. Oh. And call up some other friends. Come over. I have a way to be happy. Or get your family together with you, children, husband, wife, and just run around in a circle. Oh. That is what material happiness is like. It's a delusion that hits your mind. You get hit by the wave of material happiness. And because of being hit by that wave, you don't mind struggling, working hard, just to experience that sensation. And then you tell your children, of course, this is how you're happy. This is how to be happy. Make yourself dizzy. Feel that tizzy. And then you'll be a proper member of our family and the society. Of course, there are the waves of distress. No one likes that. So then you have your stock expressions available for when the waves of distress come. Well, it's just part of life. It's all a learning process. It's all about just coping and just discovering who you are through the adversities. And you talk like that. But actually, no one ever learns anything substantial from this coming and going of the ways of happiness and distress. Why is that? Because as long as your activities are what is known in Sanskrit as rajogun and tamogun, mode of passion and mode of ignorance, you can't learn anything from material existence. A lifestyle is simply working, sleeping, becoming intoxicated. This will not allow you to learn. The hope is that as you get older, you'll accumulate wisdom. But have you noticed? People don't accumulate wisdom as they get older, although they'll never admit that. Because they're living a life in passion and ignorance, they don't have the contemplative skills, the reflective ability enough to actually understand what's going on in the ocean of material happiness and distress, the Bhava Sagar. If you're going to learn even materially from the ocean of material existence, you have to at least be on the platform of Sattvagun, mode of goodness, in which your mind and senses are disciplined and controlled. You're very clean. All your activities are those of integrity. You understand what is purification. You understand that you're meant to use your intellectual faculties for understanding the ultimate goal of life. This is the highest level of material existence, known as the mode of goodness. Being in the mode of goodness doesn't mean simply buying organic food. It doesn't mean shopping at the health food store instead of the ordinary supermarket. It's kind of the California version of the mode of goodness, you know. Being in the mode of goodness, as Lord Krishna explains, means learning and knowing how to control all your senses so that they act in a purified way. That takes training. That takes education. So the only ones who even materially learn from life are those who know how to live in the material mode of goodness, a contemplative, purified lifestyle of discipline and sense control. Otherwise, what you're seeing today all around you is passion and ignorance. There's work, work, work to please my senses. That's passion. And in relief through sleep and intoxication, that's the mode of ignorance. These are your choices these days. So this is why no one ever learns anything. And no one gets out of the ocean of material existence. Bhava Sagar. There is another choice. The process of bhakti yoga, first of all, points out to you the illusions of the ocean of material existence, the constant waves of happiness and distress. When you're trapped in the ocean, you don't want to just tread water and analyze, this is a good wave, this is a bad wave. You want to get out of the ocean. Did you notice that when you're standing on the shore, let's say you go to Santa Monica, and you know, you're looking from the hills above the beach, there's a walkway. I used to walk there when I lived in Los Angeles here at New Dorka in the mid-70s. And, you know, there's a walkway. Prabhupada would also take his walks there. So you can look from the cliffs down onto the beach. You see the waves, the ocean. The ocean looks so nice from afar. Its waves look very attractive. But if you're in the midst of the ocean in those waves, you'd have a different experience. So this is the nature of Maya, the illusory energy of Krishna. It looks nice from the outside. Yeah, it looks pretty good. Yeah. That would do my senses very nicely. Yeah, that would solve all my anxieties. Yeah, that would pass the time in a very nice way. But once you get in, it's a different experience. But it's too late then. You're caught. What did I do that for? Oh, this is not what I thought it would be. So please remember that. The next time you contemplate bathing in the ocean of material existence, splashing in the waves of happiness and distress, from the outside vantage point, it looks attractive. But once you get into it, there's simply suffering. Krishna warns you about that in Bhagavad Gita. So in Krishna consciousness, we train you how to see reality, how not to be fooled by so-called paradises that turn into hell. If it was actually paradise, it wouldn't turn into hell. But the fact that it turned into hell means it's not paradise. So what positive thing does bhakti yoga have to offer? Bhava Sagar, the ocean of ecstatic love of Krishna. It has its waves. It has its different tastes. Lord Chaitanya came to show you how to love Krishna by splashing and swimming and diving in the ocean of ecstatic love of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself teaching you how to love Krishna. Through the process of bhakti yoga, you can actually experience what is God, what is love of God. By spiritualizing your senses, training your senses in such a way that you will perceive the ocean of ecstatic love of Krishna everywhere, all around you. Then, even in the greatest danger, the greatest calamities of this world, you'll be able to stabilize yourself and help to stabilize others. And you can make the most desperately needed contribution in this world by teaching others how to be Krishna conscious, how to make the choice of what ocean to swim in, what waves to feel, how to feel the waves of ecstatic love of Krishna instead of the waves of mundane happiness and distress. Well, this is the contribution made by Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, teaching you how to be a devotee. And because we are following in the line of Lord Chaitanya, we're also teaching how this can be done. This is the greatest welfare work. Yes, in Krishna consciousness, we help in other ways. Just like you heard, we have programs for distributing food. But that's not ordinary food. That's food offered to Krishna. Not only will it nourish the body, but it will purify the soul. It's a devotional activity to take Krishna prasad. So when we help during disasters, we understand what the real disaster is. The real disaster is material existence entirely. That's the real disaster. Now, who is teaching you how to cope with that? Instead, you just get diverted. Turn on your television with your remote control. Why television? Home entertainment system. How are you going to entertain yourself tonight? Where will you go? What will you do? All these activities help you to forget what is actually happening. We are here to help you remember. We're not afraid to discuss the disasters of this world because we see the whole material existence as a disaster. But it's not that we're simply sitting around meditating on disasters. No, we see the negative and the positive. The positive is all attractive. The positive is ever increasing in true happiness and true knowledge. That ever-increasing positive is Krishna, the all-attractive. But Krishna is for your spiritual senses, not the material senses that perish so easily. So please take us seriously as we try to teach you, according to Bhagavad Gita, how to swim in the waves of ecstatic love and service for Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes. Yes. Why distress? He what? What's that? He what? His creation? He allowed the creation. Yes. And he warned you, don't come here. But you persisted. Just like I was a little boy, and my father warned me, don't go play on the railroad tracks. But my little brother and I, we persisted. And so when my father found out, he punished us. He said, you have to stay inside for 2 days. You can't watch television. You can't go outside and play. So Krishna warned you. You have read Bhagavad Gita? What does Krishna say? He says, don't come here. It's not your place. But we insist. It's like if I'm an architect and I design a house for you and I say, look, I'm the architect. I designed this house. I'm going to tell you all the faults. After a short time, the roof is going to collapse. After a short time, the floor is going to collapse. After a short time, the walls are going to collapse. There'll be electrical hazards. There'll be water hazards. There'll be gas hazards. Don't live in this house. But suppose, in response, you say, no, 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 it looks good to me. I love the paint job. And your wife will say, oh, and the curtains are so pretty. We're moving in. Jai Shri Krishna. We're moving in. This is what happens. If you don't listen to Krishna, he warns you, don't stay in this place, in the Bhava Sagar, the ocean of becoming and unbecoming. But we say, it's paradise. And then when something bad, as always, happens, how did the paradise turn to hell? What's going on here? And then we blame Krishna. Just like if I, as a little boy, blame my father. Why are you punishing us? I told you, don't go play on the railroad tracks. So you understand? Yes. Yes. Because you're not seeing Krishna everywhere. That, yes, but you can't see him unless you're qualified. Can any person on the street come up to you and demand to know about you? No. You want, where's our relationship? I'm not going to explain myself to you. I'm not going to have a personal relationship with you when you have not properly gone through the procedure of getting to know me, reciprocating with me. So Krishna is the supreme person. Yes, he's everywhere, but what does Kunti say in the first canto of Bhagavatam? Queen Kunti, she's the truly liberated woman. What does she say? Maya javanikatshanyam adhyaryokshadam avyayam nalakshase mudajusha. Krishna, you're inside everything, outside everything. You're everywhere, but because of the curtain of the deluding energy, Maya, no one recognizes you, just like you can't recognize the true identity of an actor on the stage. There's a curtain of material energy, like the clouds that cover the sun. So yes, Krishna's everywhere, but you have to be qualified to see that. We've been discussing this point in our morning classes here. This is the institution for training you how to see Krishna everywhere. You need some education how to perceive that. Okay. Anything else? Yes. No. Why should they all get the same destination? No. No. Just like all the people in this room now. Everyone here will die, yes? Anyone disagree? Well, now, do you think everyone here will go to the same destination? Still, their consciousnesses are all different. Their lifetime of activities is different, so their destination will be different accordingly. Karma is a very complicated thing. They all live their lives differently with different degrees of sinful activities, so they'll get different destinations. If some of them were thinking of Krishna, then they'll go to Krishna. But everyone here will have to deal with the ocean of repeated birth and death. The intelligent person makes a plan, just like the scientists now are saying, we have a plan. We'll give you early warning next time. Maybe we'll build a seawall around the shores of Australia. So, similarly, in Krishna consciousness, we also have a plan, but our plan works. Anything else? Those are very good questions. All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.